Blog Talk Radio.
Put a spell on you.
the major. Many times her eyes fall back to tears, Lord, Lord. And when her useful world was about to fall in, each time a slender shoulder felt the weight of all the fears, and a sorrow no one hears still rings in midnight silence in her ears. Better cry. Let me hold her for all time. If I lost just one possession, I would pick her from the garden to be mine.
Be somewhere around. You see, not only that, you see, I'll be your bridge over troubled waters. You see, the reason why I say this, baby, is because I love you, girl. I love you so much, oh, sometimes I can't even explain. You see, you're like a flower that blooms in any season, and that's why I like to say, you're my flower, baby. You're my flower. Ooh, baby. A flower. You're my flower. Flower. It's you, baby. Oh.
you, baby, baby. Shoo, baby, shoo, shoo, baby.
See what's happening.
I can't what?
And they don't have a clue.
Who's they?
They'll fall in love. And here's the bottom line.
I never charge you for anybody else singing.
She says she really grew up boy like me. Don't believe in nothing but the Almighty. Just a little jeans and a pure white tee. She never dreamed for ever be nobody wifey, yeah. She was a man a pretty but your heart is a man. Play you like a villain cause she caught in a way. Tonight I am walking away. 9 to 5 mine and I grind, yeah, yeah. Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you owe me, I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fights it by falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, that skin just like pearls. Your back against the world. I never trade you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, that skin just like pearls. The best thing in all the world. I never trade you for anybody else.
Pose like a trophy when Naomi's walking. She need an Oscar for that pretty dark skin. Pretty like Lupita when the camera closing. Drip broke 11 when my Kelly's rolling.
I think tonight she might pray her brain. Melanin too dark to throw her shade.
She minds her business and winds her ways.
Rolex 24K.
Okay.
Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fights it by falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. You're back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. The best thing about the world. I never tried you for anybody else.
Oh, have you looked in the mirror lately? Wish you could trade eyes with me. There's complexities in complexion, but your skin is glow like diamond. Dig me like the earth, you be giving birth to everything alive, baby, know your worth. I love everything about you from your nappy curl to every single curve, your body natural.
Same skin that was broken, me the same skin taking over. Most things are the focus view, but when you're in the room, they know. Tells your story. You dance and they can't control you.
in the cypher. Best thing in the world. I never charge you for anybody else singing.
Right, royalty, 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 everybody. Well, we were since we finished.
Them hustlers keep on talking. They like the way I'm walking. You're saying that you won't see. So press record and let you feel me.
Uh-huh. All right. Royalty, 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 royalty to everybody. Thank you guys for tuning in to another podcast of Enhancing Awareness Radio. I am your host, Saru. And as you guys know, we are on every weekend, Motivational Classroom on Saturdays. We got Spiritual Soul Sunday on Sundays. And also, guys, we got a sister platform now, Intuitive Soul Sessions. Intuitive Soul Sessions is a platform that I created in this retrograde, you know, because I feel that what's to come, you know, as I grow, you know, as a spiritual teacher and healer, I feel that there's going to be a time where many conversations are going to be needed. You know what I mean? So that's what I created the sister platform. So go to Intuitive Soul Sessions, Intuitive and then Soul, S-O-L, and then Sessions. I will also include a link to the new platform, the sister platform, guys, because we're still going to be here at EAR, okay? We're still going to be here at EAR, you know, every weekend. I'm not sure how I'm going to incorporate that yet, but what I'm doing is uploading some of EAR's favorites, you know what I mean, to the platform, you know, so you can kind of intertwine with both platforms, all right? All right, guys, so for today, there has been a lot of beating up on the women in history. You know what I'm saying? I get it and I understand it, you guys. And, you know, that's not what I'm here for, and that's not what I, you know, my intent. You know what I mean? Sometimes tough love, guys, is definitely what's needed. But, you know, women, ladies, I love y'all, but there is a huge problem. Okay, there's a huge problem. Y'all know Kevin Samuels. I don't like to give these, you know, celebrity figures, you know, energy or whatever. But, you know, he's relevant to holding women accountable. Now, I am a firm knower, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, the only person that needs to hold you accountable is yourself. You know what I'm saying? I personally allow no one to think they're holding me accountable or, you know, because I always prove them wrong. You know what I'm saying? I know a lot of our ladies, I know a lot of you guys are very ego-driven, you know, which is fine because we need our ego, you know. But I know that compassion, though, when it comes to compassion and when it comes to the woman who really loves genuinely and cares, so that has kind of been lost, you know, and it's because of, you know, society programming and all of that. You know, there's many different demographics on why it has been lost, guys. But this podcast today is really just to raise awareness, guys. There are women who truly want to grow, and I'm proud of y'all. You know what I'm saying? I'm proud of y'all. Y'all do it in y'all own way. But here's what's happening, you guys. Mother, okay? Mother, the real mother, you know, mother. And that's Mother Nature, Mother Earth, you know. Here's the thing. Mother is both, you know, what I'm coming into is mother is both masculine and female. You know, like the totality of everything, I feel, is mother. You know what I mean? Not just one aspect to where we have, you know, where the woman is more superior because she's a woman. Look, let me tell you something. I could have been a woman. I could have been a mama, you know, the last lifetime. You know what I'm saying? So whatever your spirit, your soul, you know, it navigates through many different aspects. You know what I'm saying? So I say this to say that no one is better than no one just because they have, you know, some type of sexual organ. You know what I'm saying? So I want to get away from gender roles, you know, but I want to speak on the cosmic mother, guys. And what I mean by this is thing must balance is what I'm getting at. Everything must balance. I don't care. My mother, Aries, you know, look, everything must balance. Everything must balance. Everything must balance, ladies, woman, you know, women. Everything must balance, okay? So I have a few clips for you guys. But before I go, before I got a major clip, and talk about the woman. It's going to bring some points. But, guys, again, you know, when it comes to there has been a lot of foul shit that has went on in history, and we want comfort healing. It doesn't work like that. You know what I'm saying? This shit is fucked up. I'm not going to even say messed up. I ain't going to be nice. But this shit is fucked up. And women, ladies, we have a huge problem, and that problem is one of accountability. I see it all the time with our women. You know, you guys can't grow because you don't really want to look in the mirror in transparency and admit that you guys are wrong. You know, admit when you are wrong. You know, guys, I promise you, when you admit you're wrong and when you hold yourself accountable, it may not seem like it at first, but the more you practice it, the more that accountability can be your power. You guys know Sensei from the platform, Sensei, Cedric, Eli, all of them. You know, they used to try to hold me accountable. And I actually thank them now that I look back. You know, I thank them because I've grown a lot. But the things that they tried to hold me accountable for, I had to learn how to hold that accountable for myself. I was just like y'all. You know, I didn't want to hear it. I was, you know, kicking and screaming, you know, cussing and, you know, cutting the motherfucker off. You know, I get it. Not only have I done it, I still do it on occasions. You know, guys, I find myself having to immediately go back and apologize and make things right and hold myself accountable out loud, all right, out loud. So holding yourself accountable out loud is going to be a practice, but it's obtainable, you guys. I promise you, when you learn to do that, because I know a lot of you guys like to be ahead of the class, you know, but women, ladies, you know, comfort healing is not, you know, it's just not, it don't happen, you know what I mean? This shit is ugly, it's going to get messy, it's going to get dirty. So I want to go ahead and start this off with forgiving yourself, you know what I'm saying? We have to learn and know how to forgive ourselves, all right? So we'll go ahead and do this. I'll do a song after this. And I'll be back in momentarily, guys, but I have a few great clips for you guys. But let's start with forgiveness first.
Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. You got to let that shit go. Deep divers, sometimes it is incredibly hard to let it go. To let go of feeling a certain way because somebody wronged you in the past. But the best thing you can do today is let it go. Look, even the cat down the road is saying, you got to let it go. 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 Peace, infinite waters, diving deep once again. Beautiful deep divers, we are out here in nature, baby, in the secret garden. Another gorgeous day. I'm just, woo, breathing in that good ass prana, baby. And I'm sending you tons of let it go energy. Take that, take that. Take that. The cat down the road told me, deep divers, you're dealing with past hurts, aren't you? Somebody did you dirty. Somebody has wronged you. How, deep divers, to let go of past hurts and forgive someone who doesn't deserve it? Because they didn't even say sorry, did they? No, they didn't. So I got a great question that came to me, deep divers. Somebody asked me this. They're like, Ralph, how can I get over these past hurts? I'm finding it incredibly hard to forgive someone who wronged me in the past, who made me feel so terrible in the past. And every single day I wake up thinking of this person who wronged me, who did me dirty, Ralph. How can I just free myself from all of this hurt? Powerful question. Deep divers, I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt. A lot of people did me dirty in the past. Real dirty. And we ain't even had breakfast yet. Can I get a hello there? But guess what, deep divers? I'm still shining. Why? Because you can't stop the sunshine when it's this bright. Look, deep divers. Let me share with you what's helped me along my journey. How I got over past hurts and even coming to forgive people who wronged me in the past who didn't even deserve it. I've been scammed in the past, deep divers. I've been tricked in the past by people. I've been hard done by, and it made me feel a certain way. I'm like, these people don't even deserve forgiveness. And I'm not going to let it go. I'm not going to let it go. It's like the tug of war right now, Deep Divers. I'm not going to let it go. Then I had to let it go for my own peace of mind. You see, Deep Divers, oh, baby, to let go of past hurt and forgive someone who doesn't deserve it, realize that we forgive people for our sake, not theirs, for our own peace of mind, so we can move forward. You can forgive them. It doesn't mean that you have to forget what's happened. You don't have to forget it. But we forgive people that have hurt us in the past, in a previous relationship, at work, wherever it may be, even in your own home, a family member who wronged you, Deep Divers. That is totally unacceptable. I agree. But you forgive these people for your sake, not for theirs, because you have to in order to move forward. A lot of people are holding on to heavy energy today. A lot of people have a heavy heart today because they can't let it go. They're holding on to a grudge, not realizing that it's actually causing them more pain than the person that inflicted the pain onto them. Because they don't even know what they did. Right? Growing up, Deep Divers, I was into cinematography, and I still am. So later on in life, when I was like 21 or so, I started to actually take it really seriously. And I was actually doing commercials for people, filming commercials for people. And I actually did a film commercial for this football club, and they wanted like a 3-minute commercial, and the guy was like, hey, just do this for me and I'm gonna pay you the full amount. I'm gonna give you the money in installments. And I'm like, cool. I was just happy to have some work experience. I did the job, Deep Divers, and this person was like, hey, I'll pay you, don't worry about it. I'm like, I'm not worried, but pay me my money, right? And then days went on, then weeks went on, and I started to say, wait a minute, what's going on here? Is this person not paying me? We signed a contract, what's going on? I was calling their phone, and it was just going to the voicemail. Hello, so-and-so is here. Leave a message after the tone. Leave a message after the tone. I'm like, I don't want to leave a message. I want to see you face-to-face. We've got a lot to talk about, right? And I never actually saw this person. They kept ducking and diving and hiding. And I realized, okay, this person obviously didn't pay me my money. What am I going to do about it? Apart from being mad, I started to realize that what good is it if I'm getting mad? Now they're stealing my peace of mind. They're stealing my happiness. They're stealing my comfort. And I was mad for a little while, but when I started to really mature, I said, okay, how people treat me is their karma. Let the universe deal with them. How I respond is mine. What? Slow motion this side. You see, Deep Divers, you got to realize this. Life becomes easier when you accept that apology you never got. If somebody caused you pain in a relationship, if somebody caused you pain at home, one of your family members, or in the workplace, or just when you're out and about, and you still can't get over it, realize that for your own peace of mind, you have to move forward. Because anytime you are thinking of someone, Deep Divers, you are giving them a part of you. Anytime you are thinking of someone, you are giving them a part of who you are.
Ooh,
so instead of thinking of someone who is not serving you, think of someone who actually loves you. A substitute. You need to substitute them for someone else. Someone that's always been there. Stop allowing people who do so little for you to take such a large space in your mind. They don't deserve to be there. You are shining the spotlight on people who do so little for you. And that's why you can't get over this past hurt. Say, look, I'm going to start shining the spotlight on people I love. I'm going to start to love myself as well and place myself in the spotlight. Why are you thinking, listen very closely, deep divers. Why are you thinking of these people who do so little for you when you can think about yourself? That's part of self-love, right? So I say this every single day. Ain't nobody got time for that. That's how I get over past hurts. And that's how I forgive someone who doesn't even deserve it. I say, look, I am far too busy right now building my empire, inspiring millions, living my best life to think about somebody who hurt me in the past. I say this, deep divers, we've got things to do. Say it with me. We've got things to do. Say it one more time. We've got things to do. That's right. That's how you get over past hurts and forgive someone who doesn't even deserve it. We've got things to do. If I had stayed crying over what that person did to me or what people have done to me in the past, I wouldn't leave the house. I would be in an arrested state of development. I would be mourning. I would be not creating. So to move forward, you have to say to yourself, we've got things to do. I'm not going to let this person interfere with what I plan for myself. I'm not going to let this person interfere with my greatness. I'm not going to let this person interfere with my happiness. I'm not going to let this person steal my time or my energy. Why? Because we've got things to do. Can I get a hello there? Deep divers, the reason why you're hurt, the reason why I was hurt, growing up, we are all going to feel hurt. Someone is going to screw us over and not going to be sorry about it. But the reason why you are hurt is because you are sensitive. That's why you care. And guess what, deep divers, I'm here to remind you that sensitivity is a gift. Sensitivity is your superpower. And you feel, you actually care. That's why it's hurt you so much. But I'm here to tell you, deep divers, that's something to be proud of. That's something to celebrate, to say, actually, I do care. But what happens, deep divers, if you are sensitive and the other person is not sensitive? What happens if you are dealing with an insensitive soul, an insensitive human being who doesn't care about how you feel? What happens when people do not take responsibility for how they treat you? You have to take responsibility for how you respond. You have to realize, deep divers, not everybody on this planet got a hug today. Let me repeat that. Not everybody on this planet got a hug today. Hurt people hurt people. And sometimes people are insensitive and they want to cause other people pain. But I'm here to remind you, deep divers, it's not your issue. Don't feel like you are responsible for their behavior. Say, look, this person has issues. They had issues before I came on the scene. I am not their problem. But today this stops. This is how you get over past hurts and how to forgive someone who doesn't even deserve it. Awareness. Key word, awareness. When you realize this today, Deep Divers, not everybody has the same heart as you. What? Slow motion this side. Say it again, Ralph. Not everybody has the same heart as you. Not everybody can feel as deeply as you because not everybody is as awesome as you. Some people are walking around like bricks, like stone, like glass. You actually feel something. You're like a soft feather, Deep Divers, and that's something to be proud of. You have to realize this today, Deep Divers, that you aren't responsible. You are not responsible for someone's insensitivity. Cultivate your sensitivity because you will meet someone who honors who you truly are. You will meet somebody who respects who you truly are. But right now, it's all about you cultivating this inner love. It's all about you cultivating this inner peace. When people don't bring you peace, when people have disturbed your inner peace from your past, it's your responsibility to cultivate inner peace today, first and foremost, within yourself. Deep Divers, how, oh baby, to get over past hurt and forgive someone who doesn't even deserve it. And to forgive someone who doesn't even deserve it. Realize this today, Deep Divers. Every single day, we meet all kinds of people. But instead of saying these are bad people because they hurt me, say these are lessons in disguise. Instead of asking the universe, hey, why did this happen to me, universe? Ask this instead. What lesson can I extract from this experience? That's how you grow. That's how you move forward. And realize once again, Deep Divers, you have to let it go to grow. Most people don't even know what they have done. Most people don't even know what they did to you, Deep Divers, because they don't feel anything. So why are you crying over someone who is not crying over you? What? Slow motion this side. Why are you thinking about somebody who's not even thinking about you? They don't care. They've moved on. So should you. They've moved on. So should you. They're not wasting any time or energy thinking about how badly they did you dirty. So why should you think about them? Why are you giving them the spotlight in your mind? You deserve better. You can't make somebody see who is afraid to look at the truth. You can't convince somebody about, hey, look, you've wronged me so badly. Look at what you've done. You can't make people change unless they are ready to change. You can't make people take accountability unless they are ready to take accountability. You can't make people take responsibility unless they are ready to take responsibility. So it's all on you. Right now, it's all on you. Realize this today, Deep Divers. You can't force people to see who are blind to the truth of their actions. What? Slow motion this side. So what am I going to do then, Ralph? All you have to do is to realize it's all on you. Right now, it's all about your life. It's all about you moving forward. It's all about you growing to the next level of your life. moving to the next chapter and realizing that this chapter with that person is over. It doesn't mean you have to forget what happened. It doesn't mean you have to forget about how badly they treated you. It just means that you have to become the hero of a new story. And this story hasn't got them in it. This new story has not got them in it. Deep divers, we're having fun, aren't we? Yes, we are. How, oh baby, to get over past hurt and forgive someone who hurt you. 7-day vegan challenge. Shout out to everybody who's going plant-based, eating to live right about now. I wake up and tell myself this every single day, deep divers. I say this. I owe it to myself, deep divers, to take care of myself when the world does not take care of me. And how do I take care of myself? By eating to live, by having a delicious green juice smoothie, a delicious mango smoothie, a delicious acai bowl, some delicious pumpkins, and a butternut squash, right? A butternut squash soup, and beautiful, what else? Papaya. That's right. That makes me feel right at home, right? We have to make an oath to ourselves, a vow to ourselves, a promise to ourselves that we will take care of ourselves when the world does not take care of us. When someone has hurt us, even from our past, many times we stop eating. Wait a minute. We ain't even had breakfast yet. Well, can somebody get you some breakfast, please? Okay, that's good. Deep divers, how to get over past hurt and forgive someone who doesn't deserve it. Communication is the foundation of all great relationships. Leave the door open slightly, ever so slightly, just for open communication. They could have changed. That's why I always say time is the greatest healer. You are changing. Therefore, that person who caused you a lot of pain could have changed. So if there is space and time for some communication, leave the door open for some communication. And then they may have an apology for you. However, deep divers, pay attention. Don't wait for their apology. Don't wait for them to come around. Because once again, we've got things to do. To get over past hurt and forgive someone who doesn't deserve it. Somebody who did you dirty. They did you dirty, right? Realize that you have to stop waiting until they sort themselves out. You have to stop waiting until they see what they've done. You have to stop waiting until they're ready to apologize. Why? Because we have things to do. You have to move on with your life. You have to learn to accept the apology you never got from them. And realize this today. This will empower you so much. Why? Because you won't be at their mercy. Once you take your power out of their hands, you free yourself. Let me repeat that. Once you take your power, your life, your peace of mind, your happiness out of their hands, you free yourself. To get over past hurt and forgive someone who doesn't deserve it, stop being at their mercy. Stop begging them by thinking of them for their attention. You need to let these people go, deep divers. And you need to move on with your journey and surround yourself with people who are there for you and surround yourself with people who inspire you. To get over past hurt and forgive someone who doesn't deserve it, make an oath to yourself today, deep divers, and repeat this. I will no longer allow people who do so little for me to steal my happiness, to steal my energy, and to steal my peace of mind. Instead, I will only allow people into my mind who have my best interests at hand and who are good for my mental health. So there you have it, deep divers. That's how to get over past. Oh my gosh, look, you've already gotten over it. And you're doing a little samba, baby. You're doing a little samba, baby. That's fantastic. And that's why we're just saying, feels so good to be alive, baby. Can I get a hello? Beautiful deep divers. We're just, whoa, breathing in that good ass prana, baby. Shout out to everybody who's been getting the wonderful good ass prana shirts. Deep divers at ralphsmart.com/clothes. Got a question for me? Add me on Instagram right now at Infinite Waters. And the model search is still going on. If you are a sexy ass model, woo, with a lot of heart, add me on Instagram at Infinite Waters. If this video resonated with you today, deep divers, check out the new book then for more information like this. Feel Alive by Ralph Smart on Amazon. Have a beautiful day, deep divers. Peace. Infinite Waters, diving deep once again. Stay well. Stay healthy. Peace. Yo! Look, you've already gotten over it. You're doing a little samba, baby. You're smiling again. Look at you go. Peace.
Yo, we about to get through the one right. We about to do this one. All the kids, the mothers, the fathers, the brothers, the sisters.
Everything, 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 everything As I said, this book demonstrates that we are not as different as we like to think that we are. So what I'm going to go over real brief right now is what the attributes are of the good black woman. Since she's not on television, we may not recognize her. Okay. Now, the good black woman has 7 attributes, and then I'm going to explain to you how to utilize those in your day-to-day life. The good black woman has self-discipline, courteousness, cheerfulness, self-respect, intelligence, cleanliness, and love. Now, we've heard that terminology. You know, it's like one of those where they tell you, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. What do that mean? You know, how can I make that functional in my day-to-day life to benefit me as a practice? It sounds like all theory. Where's the practicum? What do I do? The good black woman has self-discipline. That's self-control. Let me make that real for you, sisters. We can start with our mouth. The good black woman can control her mouth. She don't have to say everything that comes up. It's okay if he get the last word sometime. You know. She don't cuss in public. And she works on not cussing in private. She don't tear a man down with her mouth because they can't out-argue her. Can't nobody out-argue her. I have charged that we nag our men too much. We keep our men's head tied up so much with our petty grievances about our personal relationship that he don't have time to think and plan for our future. Because he got to deal with what's going to happen with us every day. You know, it's real odd. When the black man come home, he almost has to do a wind test or stick his toe in the door. He don't know what's waiting. He don't know who in there today. He know it's a possibility that there's some kind of new monster that he didn't even know about yesterday. So, you know, we need to not make it like that. We need to not be so vicious with our mouth. You know, men are not petty like that. They're not going to out-argue us. And it has been proven that verbal abuse is just as harmful as physical abuse. So let's not use our mouth to do that to him. The good black woman is courteous. She says, thank you, baby. I appreciate you doing that. I appreciate every effort you make. Try harder. I'm gonna work with you. Thank you. I know you did your best. Now that's a whole new language. But just to say that during the course of the day, every day, with the man that you're trying to be with or want to be with will make our life easier. We can't get it if we don't give it. We keep wanting them to give us and do something for us that we refuse to do and give to them. It don't work like that. The good black woman has self-respect. She don't have to go out naked just to get the attention of a man. I have sisters all over the country, and they come up to me after the lectures, and they'll be talking to me, and they'll say, well, you know, all he think about is sex. All he think about is my body. I say, why don't you show him something else? Right. And then here's the really good one. They'll come up, and they'll have on a weave. They have on false eyelashes, another whole face, false fingernails, and all of that. And then they'll say, but I'm looking for a real man. The good black woman can pull a dress down without thinking that it devalues her. She doesn't have to use her body because she has so many other good attributes about herself to get the attention of a man. We can take the sisters in a position to take all of the charge and sexual energy out of the black community by just dressing differently. We have the power and control over that. That don't stop you from being beautiful. That don't stop you from getting a man. And it certainly puts things on the right perspective so some other judgments can be made other than physical. It don't take no knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to have a sexual reaction. That's the most base. We spend less time doing that than anything else we do. So, you know, that doesn't always have to be the forefront issue. We know we are capable of that. The good black woman has intelligence, meaning that she knows how to behave properly in the street. She's not in the wrong place. Some of our women don't know what else to do other than go to the bar. They need some activities. Some of our women thinking that staying home on the weekend is some kind of sin. Some of our women think that if they don't have a new outfit to wear every day that they're going to self-destruct. You know, we have a lot of just that kind of nonsense going. Every time we buy new outfits and clothes or whatever, all we're doing is sending money out of our community. We don't own no clothing store. If the white man closed the shoe factory, we'd all be here barefooted tonight. We don't own no shoe factory. You know, very base things that we don't own that we put our money into and demand we have to have them. A lot of times our men look at us and know that he ain't never going to be able to make enough money to give us all of the things we say we want. And don't no man want to be with no woman who he constantly got to deny her the things that she says she wants. And that represents failure to him, to have to always, you know, not be able to provide us with what we ask for. One of the ways we can do that is to start being satisfied with less. You know, the good black woman is clean. Now that's a hard one. The good black woman try to keep the house clean. Good black woman is clean by her own body. You know, a lot of those things we kind of take for granted, but all of our people don't know about that. There are people who are angry with me because I even describe the fact that some of us as sisters don't have the proper personal hygiene as if that don't exist. We have too much falsehood and pretense going about our condition. Everybody that's dressed up ain't clean. Just the truth. We have to look at our condition in the light of truth. Stop reacting emotionally and pretending that just because we don't want to one of the most difficult things that I deal with out here is trying to teach our people the difference between an actual fact and an opinion. Our people think that they can accept or reject truth based on how they feel about it. Your feelings don't change the truth. The truth is just going to be there. You can feel any kind of way you want to feel about it. Those are just, those kind of emotions have kept us from growing. Because anything we don't like, we just reject that and say, well, I don't believe that. That don't mean that it's not the truth. It just makes you a disbeliever. The good black woman practices non-possessive loving. Now, y'all know that's a hard one. Now, envy is wanting what someone else has. And jealousy, of course, is just selfishness. Non-possessive loving is not an easy one for us to practice. And, of course, I have a lot of sisters and some brothers who are in disagreement with me saying that. But the actual fact is that our men are outnumbered about 5-1. And nature is going to require that the men take responsibility for more than one woman and her children. Most of our men have children by more than one woman anyway. So I don't know why that was such a surprise, allegedly, when I said that. The black man has not been waiting on me to tell him he could have more than one woman. You know, I'm in agreement with the rest of y'all. I don't think he should do that, but I fail like you did. There are some things, perhaps, about the nature of our man that we have been given some definitions about that are not true. There are some things he can do that we call him a dog. We do not have the same capabilities as a man. I am not talking about fornication and adultery. That's something else. I'm talking about actual responsibility of fatherhood and husbandhood of another family. That's quite different from fornication and adultery. We don't have the same capabilities of them. That's right. A man can have two homes, two sets of in-laws. He can eat dinner at two houses, two sets of children, two garages, two separate sets of friends attached to that woman. He can have all of that. We can't do that. We can't cook dinner at two houses. We can't sleep with one man four nights a week and another one three. Ain't no man gonna agree with that. We can't have one set of children we leave in one place and go and stay in another place and take care of another set. It doesn't work for us. Now, that does not mean that we can't have sex with more than one man. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just taking responsibility for your children. Now, certainly, every man can't take financial responsibility for all of his children. He can do something. But a man who is spending time with a child is going to do something for it. Because then they'll find out what we have since we've been taking care of them by ourselves. You don't like to always say, no, I can't do it. No, I ain't got it. So the children will make you get it up. You spend some time with it. You know, that's an important thing. The effectiveness of the principles that I just described, their usefulness has not diminished just because modern opinion has changed about them. There is not a black man in this room who does not still enjoy it if his woman bake him a cake. Well, our young daughters are being raised and taught that that's old style and that's out of fashion. We are not making those rules. Somebody else is, and they're imposing them on us and making us think that we have to qualify under them. I tell the brothers, just like I tell the sisters, if you have a woman that you've been working with for months or years, and you can't get that woman to get in agreement with your program, then get rid of her and get another one. And I tell the sisters the same thing. If you're with a man you can't agree with, don't make his life miserable. Get with a man you can agree with. But we spend too much time living in hell with each other. We spend too much time tearing each other down, trying to make the other person do different or function different. If you want somebody to change, first change yourself. We set the example. We are the teacher. We are the mother. We set the example.
Powerful, powerful, powerful. That's just the introductory, guys. You know, to those who have the heart to hear, you know, but as I always say, guys, anything that is not growing is dead anyway. You know what I'm saying? So anything not growing is dead. So woman, you know, as a woman, if you have been the same type of woman you've always been, you know, maybe you want to reevaluate that. You know what I'm saying? You know, I kind of feel exhausted about getting on to women, and you know, but here's the thing, guys. A woman will always know, but I feel that a woman, this is why I should have invited somebody on to kind of, you know, piggyback with me as far as the woman goes, because I'm not a woman. I can't speak for y'all. But one thing I do want to say is that I see a lot of y'all growing, and I see a lot of y'all growing in y'all own way, and know that that's okay. But, you know, again, guys, know that there is a huge problem that has been swept under the rug, you know what I'm saying, for years, for ages, you know. But I hope that you guys can really hear, have a heart to truly hear that there is a huge problem. And, you know, the woman, the egotistical woman who's all about self, who's selfish, who's jealous, who's envious, you know, y'all know who the fuck y'all are behind the screen, okay? Y'all know who that third mask is when y'all look yourself in the mirror when nobody else is looking, you know? And it's that person who is on trial, okay? Because here's the thing, guys, nothing is secret. You know, nothing that you do is secret. Nothing that we do is secret. I'm talking to my goddamn self, you know what I'm saying? So transparency is going to be your key, woman. Transparency is going to be your key out loud, not being selective and picking and choosing and all this shit, but out loud. All right? So love her. She was real hot in the 90s. You know, and many people, you know, did not take her in. You know, it was a lot of, you know, when it comes to women and correction, there's a lot of resistance. You got to ask yourself, woman, why is there a lot of resistance? You know, one of my best friends, my mom wishes of, I love my mom to like God. Please understand that. But, you know, my mom, she told me a long ago, you know, best friends, you know, that's elementary shit, you know, which it is, you know. My mom is a wonderful teacher, you know. I don't give her flowers because I'm coming through healing as I'm coming through my own healing with my mother, you know. But I want to give her flowers because I don't know if she knows it, but she is actually a matriarch. And when it comes to when it comes to the chaos mother, you know, a lot of y'all can learn a lot from my mother. I talked to many women. Me and one of my other friends, one of my newfound friends were talking just yesterday, Leo, fire women. You know, I talked to a lot of headstrong women. I come from a fleet of headstrong women, y'all. But I talked to a lot of fire women, and they actually honor my mom. You know what I'm saying? They actually look up to, so, you know, mom, if you're listening, you know how you are one of the matriarchs, love. I hope that you know that, you know, I know there's a lot of shame. And this is not just to my mother, but to any mother. I know that there may be a lot of shame that you may feel and a lot of pressure that's up against you as you're having to balance. But, baby, if you can make it through this, oh, you will be a force to be reckoned with. You're already a force, but this is one of your hard parts as far as when, you know, when it's time to pay the piper, you know, everything you put out in which you'll get back. But, I mean, we're all learning, you know, and I'm growing as I'm talking, you guys. It's not easy sometimes, you know, dealing with strong black women is not, you know. But as men, you know, for me, I can see for myself is that I am learning after my anger, okay, because I get angry and I do some foul shit right back to y'all ass, you know what I'm saying? But in growing together as one, you know, as we're coming back to guys, I just think it's important, you know, for us to express ourselves and not, you know, point fingers, you know, and that's what ear is a safe space to express yourself. So Eternal will not be in today. He's on a trip. But this is something. Shout out to Rain DJ Brunts. 708. Hey, 708. Thank you so much for your loyalty and your listening. Robert, that's it. Hey, Robert. this is going to be an hour clip long, guys, and I'll be in to close out the podcast. But this is, grab your pen, grab your paper. And again, if you're a woman who truly has the time to truly just sit and genuinely listen, you know, to things that are being expressed, guys, we have been wanting to tell you the truth for so long, but you couldn't hear us. There was so much friction, like compassion was totally lost. But she was trying to tell y'all, you know, a woman, a strong black woman, trying to let y'all know what the problem was in the 90s. But, you know, as we do in this society, and it's not a bad thing, we don't catch on to, I don't want to say too late, but we catch, everything is everything. You know, it is what it is. Everything happens in its divine order. All right, so grab a pen and just listen.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Vibrations. I'm Raven Geary. Today on our program, one of the hottest properties making the talk show circuit, Scheherazade Ali. An established writer indeed, Ms. Ali is best known as the author of The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman, a very controversial and, if I may say so, a very critical view of life of today's black woman. She joins us today in our studio, and of course we'd like to welcome you today to Vibrations.
Well, thank you, Raven, for inviting me.
Basically, it's your premise that the black woman is out of sync with the natural order of things. Can you explain that?
Well, it's a very sensitive subject.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I believe that I have tried to approach it from a very sensitive angle. What I have actually said is that the black woman's disrespect and rebellion against the leadership and the authority of the black man is a direct cause of the breakdown in the black family structure. It's not an attack on us as black women. It's just saying that in the breakdown of any relationship, both parties have to take responsibility. And as black women, we have been protected and insulated from any kind of examination about what our share of the responsibility is in the breakdown of the black family. My book represents the first platform, certainly, that the black man has ever had to air his grievances about the black woman, because no one would ever listen to him. They have only listened to us.
Can you talk a little bit about the book itself? What brought you to this point of having to sit down and use your pen to write this book?
Well, actually, it was my first book. In 1985, I authored a How Not to Eat Pork or Life Without the Pig.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was going around doing what I was calling Get Off That Hog lectures. And during my travels, I noted that I would take the microscope and show people how you can't kill the trichina worm in pork by cooking it. Heat was not destroying the worm, and I would show them, you know, the difference and demonstrate how FDA was now using radiation to try to kill the worms in pork because cooking was not working, which is what we had always been told. And during that time, a lot of black men were in agreement to get off eating pork. They wanted to change their eating habits, and they were happy to find out some information that might possibly save their lives. But it was black women who were the most adamant, who refused to change meal planning techniques, seasoning food, cooking techniques. And so I said, it's interesting. I said, if we are refusing to provide the black man with the proper physical food, when we know that food is what sustains life, then what else are we withholding from him? Possibly there are some other areas, emotionally, spiritually, you know, psychologically, that we are affecting his behavior by what we do or what we withhold and refuse to give. And that led me to try to find out. You know, we've always heard that the black man leaves the black family, abandons his woman and children, won't take care of the children, won't work, stays out all night, turns into a drunk, takes drugs. You know, we've heard a lot of negative things. Most of them are true. But I wanted to find out what happens before he gets to that point. What leads up to the breakdown? We've never gone back to try to find out what happens in the relationship between the black man and a black woman that makes him go off and do all of these bad things. To assume that this is just normal, natural behavior for black men would be to assume that he is naturally bad. And I do not believe that the man that God gave to us as a mate is a naturally bad person. And so I wanted to try to examine what goes on with him. What's his side of the story?
Did a black man ask you to write this book?
Oh, no. No, no, certainly not. I think they were just as surprised as black women. many of them approached the title of the book with a little apprehension because they have not had a champion. We have never had a black woman who actually stood up and said, I'm standing up for the black man's side of the story. We know what our side is, and both sides are true. We have done some very dreadful things to each other. And I don't exonerate black men, which is kind of a misconception that people have. I just say that we know his side. What about our side? And we do have a side. We have adopted some wrong standards. We are judging our men many times by the wrong value system. We are using his children sometimes against him. We have been told that the only benefit that a black man provides in a home is money, and if he does not give us money to take care of those kinds of financial provisions, that he has no value. And what my research has proven to me is that a black man, any man in any home, provides much more than financial support. The man provides guidance, instruction, discipline for the children, which we sorely need in our black homes. He provides gratification, fulfillment, protection. I mean, there are so many other values, and these values are the ones that are missing in our children today, which is why many black children are in the street, out of control themselves, disrespectful, don't have any regard for anyone, and most of us are scared of them, and everybody else is, because nobody has a way in to them to try to gain any control over them. So I maintain that a return to traditional family values, certain clearly defined gender responsibilities for black men and black women in running a home and a relationship will help us to produce a better child, and if we produce a better child, certainly we'll have a better future and a better nation.
And saying all of this, and as calling yourself a champion and having, if I may say, the courage to write this book and stand by it, you've caused a stir. This book is very controversial. What are you hearing from public reaction?
Well, I don't think that it's an issue among black women about whether or not the book is true or not. The issue is that I was not supposed to tell. These are inside secrets and things that we have never let our men know about. And many times we say, he can't handle me. Well, many times he can't handle us because he doesn't know what it is he's trying to handle. He doesn't understand what motivates us. We have become very adept, many of us, as being able to do something right in front of his eyes and then convince him that that's not what he really saw at all and that it didn't happen. So we've kept him kind of confused.
Excuse me. Do you realize that there are many bookstores, and in particular black bookstores, that have refused to carry the Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman?
I think that that's been overblown. Right now, the book is carried in over 5,000 bookstores here in this country and about 2,000 abroad. The book is becoming a bestseller in London. And to date, we only know of two bookstores in the entire country who refuse to carry the book.
May I tell you that there is at least one in Tallahassee.
There may be, but
and
they're doing that.
The response we got from that book owner was that your book had nothing, absolutely nothing constructive.
Was that a woman who gave you those comments?
Yes, it was.
Oh, how surprising. Okay.
Let's talk about some of the things that seem to be upsetting people
There certainly have been a lot of things taken out of context. Anyone who's ever looked at me or seen, witnessed some of the talk shows, they actually exploit a lot of issues. They take them out of context. They want to sensationalize them to build up their ratings to have a good show. So I really appreciate this opportunity to just sit down and have a fireside chat about the book.
Well, I'm glad
you're here. Without all the fireworks and everything.
You say black women, and I quote you as saying, nag, nag, nag. And
we,
that we are essentially responsible for pushing our men away by doing
A lot of times. We take a position because of our own emotional mechanisms. We harass our men too much. We nag our men too much. And we keep his mind and his head so bundled up and bogged down with all of our personal idiosyncrasies about our day-to-day personal relationship with him that a lot of times we don't free his mind up to go out and to plan sanely for our future and for the future of our children. Many of them come to us every day and they almost have to do a wind test. They don't know what's going on. They don't know who they're going to meet because we have a lot of reactions. We tend to think as black women that a successful relationship and one where we're happy is one where everything goes our way. And the first time it goes another kind of a way, then we go into hell, turmoil in our brain, and we start deciding, oh, I've got terrible problems with this man. He won't do what I want him to do. When our men have a side,
let me give that side according to Scheherazade Ali, okay? You say in your book,
okay,
and I'm quoting you,
okay,
the black man in America is the only male on earth, including every continent, who is disrespected by the women in his nation.
That's true.
This situation does not exist anyplace else among the billions of people inhabiting our planet except here in America.
That's right.
The other black men, the yellow men, the red men, the brown men, and the white men are all honored and respected by their respective nations. All other women recognize and accept that the man is the authority, the ruler, and the leader. Only here in the United States, in the black nation, scattered throughout the United States, is the black man neglected. That's pretty powerful.
And it's absolutely true. We have been displaced. A lot of us don't really understand what slavery actually did to us and how much psychological trauma it did to us regarding what our proper roles are with each other, what our responsibilities are as man and woman in our various communities and relationships. We have never been debriefed from slavery. Not really. We have just, we know we had that history, but we don't know how it affected us. We don't know how much of our actual culture we lost. How much of our ideas were taken from us. We know that our religion was taken from us. We know that our names were taken from us. But we don't know how many other standards of day-to-day life have been removed. And while we have adopted the American way of doing things, they have not worked for us because we have a very special situation. We are not the same as everyone else. And a lot of the people who want us to pretend that slavery didn't exist or to forget about it, they've never been a slave. So they don't know what we're going through. They don't know what this has done to us. It has made us as black women insecure.
Why not take up for us? Why not write something that says
we need that?
Well,
we've always had everybody to take up for us, and we've always had books about black women, how great and how strong we are, and we are that. I'm just saying that we have used our strength in the wrong direction. We have used it against our men instead of standing up for them, and if we start to support our men and to speak a good word for him publicly, then so many people won't be able to come against him and tear him down, and he won't have to feel so frustrated, and he won't be outside away from us looking for peace of mind with women of other nationalities, because we actually want our own black man. We need him back in our homes, and we want to have one. We're just living in a culture where they're trying to convince us that not only do we not need a man, but there are some other options to having one, and those options mainly are celibacy or lesbianism.
There's an old saying that says charity begins at home and spreads abroad, and
absolutely.
In your book you say that we are not bringing up our daughters and our sons in a correct manner to respect their father.
No, we're not. Unfortunately, as I say, since money has been used as the measure, many times if a black man does not have money to give us, we won't even let him see his children. We won't let him spend any time with it because he does not give us whatever the child support is. And I'm not saying that we don't need money to raise a child, but I try to explain to black women that raising a child consists of much more than feeding, clothing, and sheltering it. That's maintaining one. To raise one, you need a return of the parental coalition of the father and the mother to put the proper values into the child. Many of our boys, when we raise them alone, they grow up with the female emotional mechanism. They are suspicious. They are doubtful. They are disrespectful of womanhood. They are bitchy. They can't make a decision. And many of our girls who grow up in a home where there's no man present, they go out into the world and try to mate. They don't have any idea how to live with a man day to day, how to prepare a proper meal, how to be a mother, how to just be in love in the home. Most of what our people and our children especially have learned about how you have a relationship, they learned off of television. And television doesn't represent our needs. And so a lot of the confusion has come, you know, from outside agencies that we have not recognized how detrimental it has been to us as a people.
Can I play devil's advocate for just a moment?
Well, I wish you wouldn't, but I know you must. Go on.
What if I am a good wife?
Mm-hmm.
His home is clean. His kids are fed. I'm making sure they're well-educated. I help them with their homework. I'm a good lover in bed. I help him with the finances, and I say, look at that. He still took a walk.
Well, that's something else that's been confused about my book. I advise black men and black women. I certainly tell men that if you are with a woman who you have been with for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, 6 months, 2 weeks, whatever it is, and that woman refuses to cooperate with your ideas, does not want to get with your program of right, whatever it is, then I tell those men, get rid of that woman and get another one. And I tell black women the same thing. If you are with a man that you cannot be in agreement with, then get rid of him and get with the man that you can be in agreement with. If the man you're with is not treating you the way that you want him to and you feel that you have put in enough time to demonstrate your commitment and your sincerity of efforts to try to make the relationship work, I don't tell people to just stay in that relationship. I'm trying to teach us that we waste a lot of time being angry with each other and being dissatisfied in relationships. Get out of it and get with one where you can be happy.
You say that the black woman would like to be a clone of the white woman.
Many of us, yes. That's unfortunate.
How do you see that?
Well, that's something that was almost accidental, I'd have to say. See, the white woman has been the only mentor that we have had of a female. We've seen her every day of our life on television, every magazine, every newspaper, every commercial. You know, it's just been her face, her body, her image, whatever it has been in front of us. And so today we have the results of that. We have black women who are trying to dye their hair blonde, who are wearing blue and green contacts in their eyes, you know, who wear tons and tons of layers of makeup, who have changed their voice, who have hair weaves so they can have flowing long hair blowing in the wind, you know, like Brooke Shields or somebody, you know. And so that's been an accident. And as a result of us doing that, we have also adopted the women's liberation movement goals of wanting to be liberated from the man and have some kind of pseudo-equality, when while that may be true of the white woman and her plight with the white man, that's not really the black woman's business because we haven't been under the control of the black man for over 500 years. So what do we have to be liberated from him from?
But is there something wrong with trying to make yourself look better or more appealing?
Well, it depends on what standard you're using as being the goal of looking better. You know, if we think to look better is to put on a ton of makeup and have blue eyes, then there's something wrong with that, you know. But if we think that to look better is to certainly get a better spirit in our heart and to work every day to become a better wife, a better mother, better friend, better sister, then those values and attributes alone will make us more beautiful than we are now.
How do you feel about the fact that many people accuse you of wanting to see the black woman at a point of submission? Is that where you want to see a black woman in the 1990s?
Well, it depends on how you define submission. Those words have a tendency to have a negative connotation for us because of how they were used against us during slavery and what we connect them to. But actually, the kind of submission that I'm referring to just means cooperation and agreement. I don't think that anybody could say that I represent a woman who is subjugated in any kind of way. I don't think that anybody could say that my personality sounds like some man has me somewhere crawling around on the ground or walking 10 paces behind him. So I'm not representing that. I'm representing strength. I'm saying that we have a lot of power. We have power to make heaven and hell for our men. And I'm saying, let's try making heaven. Let's try to build him up. If a man has his woman behind him, he will believe he can do anything. And all we need to do is to get our men to believe that they can do anything. And he'll be able to, you know, do much better than he's doing now and come out of the pitiful condition he's in. As I said, I'm not exonerating him. I'm just saying that all of that strength that we have, let's use it in a more positive way instead of just going for self. You know, nobody told us that all of that being my own person and I'm independent would lead to separation and loneliness. But that's what we had to trade for that in order to have certain kinds of success. We had to give up the man because we can't find a man who will compete with us on that level. As I said, we say he can't handle us or he's intimidated by the fact I make more money than him. I think that by judging our men on how much money he makes, we have lost a lot of good men. Because as black women, if we decide that all of us are going to just determine whether or not we're going to have a man based on how much money he makes, then well, none of us have no man.
Because
most black women, black men don't have no money.
There are many men
not
out
a lot of money.
There are many men out there who don't want a woman.
That's absolutely true.
Who is not gainfully employed.
That's
just
true.
Just looks both ways.
And one of the things that I have always explained about that, Raven, is that for my lectures, which you know I do all over the country so I can give black people some ease and take some hysteria out of our communities that the book seems to have caused, I have security guards, not because of black women. We're going to do just what we do. We're going to fuss and we're going to cuss or do a little something, you know. But I have it because of black men, because the black man's guide to understand the black woman puts the black man on point. And it reminds him what he has allowed to happen to his woman and his family. Many black men become intimidated. They don't want to take responsibility for their women. They don't want the challenge. They don't want to be put on point. So they become overwhelmed. And it's them that go off. That's why I have security. Because most men know that this book puts the black man on point. It just talks about what slavery has done to the black woman, but it's really telling him what he has allowed to happen.
Let's go back to the book for just a moment. According to you, there are three types of black women.
Yeah, they overlap a little bit.
Can you define it just very briefly for us?
Well, we have, I kind of number them, I think, as one, two, and three, and I would call them lower class, middle level, and so-called upper class, you know. And we certainly have to acknowledge that we have those levels in our society. We see them every day. That is not a put-down to recognize that we have a lower class woman who perhaps lives on the street, who is an alcoholic, a bum, you know, who is outdoors, who is subject to abject poverty as a lack of, because of a lack of education and proper training and personal hygiene and other kinds of information. She exists, and we need to reach her and try to raise her up differently because many of these women have children, and we have to be responsible for them. We have the mid-class women who are the number twos, and they're kind of average. They try to do better than the lower level. And then, of course, we have the number three class, which is the so-called successful, you know, black woman who is tripping about the fact that she generally has a big job and a credit card or something, you know.
Don't you want to see black women accomplish something?
Yes, I absolutely do. But if we can't accomplish saving our race, then we have not made an accomplishment. We are looking at our man become endangered. He's already endangered. Over 60% of us are single, widowed, separated, or divorced as of last year. And so we're not together. And there is one monolith in the black community, Raven. If we don't reproduce children, then our nation, our race is going to die out here. And so we sometimes tend to look at black men and say, yeah, they're in this bad condition, and we act like they're going to die out and we're going to live on. But that's not the way it's going to go. If the black man dies, all of us are going to die because he actually is the backbone of our nation. We can't produce a baby by ourselves, and going into other nationalities still just erases, you know, our nation. And I'm trying to get us not to do that.
You have problems with interracial marriages.
Yeah, I'm not for that. Well, because of the fact that I think that God made a male and female of every nationality so that they could mate and reproduce. And I think in our particular case, a lot of us try to run to what I call a race denial by trying to marry into other nationalities to try to get away from our own heritage. Many black women do that, and certainly many black men do that, so I'm trying to get them to get back together and stop trying to marry and go into other races and infiltrate them with some of the nonsense that we bring as a result of our sad slavery history.
What if a woman says to you, well, I was alone, and he came to me at a very vulnerable point in my life, whether he's Hispanic or from the Middle East or he's
Caucasian.
White and mm-hmm. Caucasian, doesn't matter. And she just says, he came to me at a very vulnerable point in my life, Scheherazade, and he's good to me, and
it's not necessary for people to confess to me. I tell people all the time, I'm not taking a poll. This book is about self-examination and personal development. And if after reading this book, she thinks that she is still in the right place, then I don't have any control over that. I'm not out here as a judge. As I said, I haven't set myself up to say I'm the perfect black woman. Everyone should be about me. I have the same problems that all the rest of y'all got. I'm just trying to work with it. And this book is so brutally honest. We've never had anybody just talk, just straight talk to us about our personal problems, what happens inside the black home after the door is closed. And we have had a tendency to think that it's some kind of secret, that nobody recognizes, that we don't get along. And we tend to think that somebody is going to pick this book up from some other nationality and think that all black women are like other women that I describe in this book. That's totally impossible, because the things that I describe are visible and they're audible. You can see them, or you can hear them. So nobody's going to mistakenly think you do these things if they don't see them or hear them coming out of your mouth or out of your actions. You know, so there's no danger of people thinking that all of us do this.
Scheherazade, there are a lot of women out there who think, you don't like us. You don't like black women.
Oh, yes, I do. I love black women. I'm a black woman myself, and I got 5 daughters and 4 sisters, so that would, you know, be ridiculous of anybody to assume that. As I said, we have just never had anybody challenge us on our behavior. We've never had anybody to say, well, let's look at what we do. We know what he does, and he's wrong in a lot of what he does. But his wrongness, his guilt, does not ensure our innocence. We have a share in the problems that we have in the black community. And just because we are dressed up and have a job does not mean that we don't practice some aberrant behaviors that end up infecting our homes and breaking up our relationships with our men and helping to hold him down. That's all I'm saying. So everyone can look at themselves. Every man can look at his own woman. You know, this book has brought a lot of people together. This book has reunited a lot of couples who now understand what happened in their relationship. It's required reading in 15 historically black colleges and 10 white colleges. Everyone must study what slavery did to the black woman. We have never looked at it as an independent study.
May I ask you, on what do you base your information?
Just research. Being a black woman myself, living here in the country, and I interviewed over 3,000 people. I interviewed 379 black men who were married to or dating white women, over 100 black women who were married to or dating white men, and a little over 2,000 black men and over 1,000 black women. And what I found is that we don't have a control group. There was no point in me listing all of their names, because we don't have one set of Negroes that we could point at and say, okay, well, this particular group is not affected by slavery. All of us are affected by it. We just have not been able to identify the manifestation of that behavior and be able to trace it back to what the root was and how we got that way. A lot of the behavior we practice, because it's trendy, it's popular in this country, and so we think that that's just the thing to do.
Do you fault the black man for anything?
Yes, absolutely.
Briefly,
I fought
what?
Him for lying.
For lying?
Yes.
About?
All kinds of things. He won't tell us the truth about his life because he knows that we can't handle the truth. And so he will lie to us about his activities and his life because it preserves the peace for him, he thinks. But we know that lies don't build a relationship. They create doubt, suspicion, and fear. And then we exhibit those behavior traits. And fear in the female is always translated as hostility. And so, see, it's a locked-in circle that I'm trying to get us to look at how these things are connected and what they produce. A lot of the anger and frustration we have at each other is really not even at each other. It's about our conditions. It's about something that's almost been genetically sent down through our womb
mm-hmm.
because our men were not able to protect us. They were not able to keep the slave master from snatching our babies out of our womb or to allow us to have food or clothing. A lot of different kinds of things that happen to us that just make us tremble. They make us frightened. And so now it's to a point where everything that the man does, we have our total emotional balance, our self-esteem, our self-respect, everything that we stand for as a female, we have it tied right now to our men's genitals. And it depends on what he does with those, about whether or not we
have. Let's talk about that for just a moment.
See, this is an intense topic.
Yes,
I just
this
never
is.
Get a chance to explain
One
it.
Thing that I read over and over again in your book regarding infidelity. And let me just make this here. You say in your book, there is no history of the black man settling down with one woman
right.
and never desiring to have another before
right.
slavery, during slavery, or after slavery.
That's
the black man has never been recorded to have just one woman.
Right. Well, I think there are some actual facts we can look at on that. Monogamy has failed for the white man in America.
But this is like saying it's okay.
It's not me saying it's okay. This is how they're living. I'm giving you the history of what their life is. Black men haven't been waiting on me to tell them it's all right to have more than one woman. Neither have white men. You know, this is just what they do. I'm not talking about fornication and adultery. I'm not talking about one-night stands and running around rampant with other women. That's not the kinds of, when I say, more than one woman relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that before we came to America, our men had more than one wife and family. And we were satisfied with it because we had not met the monogamy idea. We had not met the American white woman who, you know, insists on certain kinds of values in her man. We had not learned envy and jealousy.
Mm.
All right, after coming here, those kinds of ideas were bred into us because of society and the mores that the Americans made up here, and so then we started to have problems with that. But I think that since it is apparent that most of them, not all of them, it's certainly up to the man, do love more than one woman. I got tons of mail. A lot of black men write and tell me that they have had two women for 5, 10, 15, and 20 years, and they can't even get the women to speak to each other. Sometimes they have two families.
Would I want to talk to a woman who's sharing perhaps the bed and the money and the social life with who I would deem as my man?
If you want to deal in reality and if you are not insecure and if you don't think that that robs you of something, you would want to know them. If he loves her, you certainly should want to know her.
There are a lot of black women out there who say,
oh, I know they're mad about that idea. I understand, you know.
That would never hold water.
Wait a minute, that's not easy. And that's a frightening thought to most of us. And I don't like that. I'm not for that. I'm in agreement with everybody else. Our men ought to just have one woman. But that is not the reality. I'm trying to get us to deal with some reality for a change. Stop dealing with fantasy. Stop dealing with television. Stop dealing with imagination of how we wish things were. Let's deal with them how they are, what it is, present tense. And
but
if we deal with that,
that's happening
then,
doesn't mean I have to like that or want to accept
that. No, that means that you can live in hell. That means you can live in doubt. That means that you can always be checking on your man. That means that you can be insecure and be, you know, tearful. And that means you can be disappointed when you find out the real truth. And you don't want to have that in your life. None of us do. But in order not to have that, then we have to deal with some reality and recognize that men are not limited in the way that women are. Men are able to love more than one woman. I'm not talking about, as I said, just a random sexual relationship of fornication and adultery and all of that. I mean that there are many black men who have children by more than one woman. What is to become of those children? They need their father.
Now, you say that once these relationships don't work,
mm-hmm.
and they start breaking up or things start going bad at home, you say, she will cry and seek sympathy. Yes. During this period, the black woman will remind the black man of everything she has ever done for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, we do that.
She will try to make him feel guilty
yes.
and ashamed of his decidedly outrageous
yes.
behavior.
Absolutely.
She'll let the house go, and I quote you, to hell.
That's right.
She may stop cleaning, ironing, washing, and cooking.
And we withhold sex. That's a real tool we use. We do that.
But if you would cheat on me or walk out on me.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. We have to get into definition. Who told us that was cheating? Where did that idea come from that that's cheating? And I'm not saying that a lot of men are not just running around. I'm not talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
But if a woman finds out that her man has been with a woman while she's been with him for 3 or 4 or 5 years, that's a serious commitment and relationship. And if it hasn't taken anything from me, if I'm not going short of anything, and if this is what he thinks his responsibility is, then what kind of hell are you going to go through to prevent that? Since we cannot stop him, we have not been successful. The white woman has not been successful in stopping the white man from having another woman. They call them a mistress. We pick up a lot of that terminology. But a man who has two women, that's not necessarily a mistress. That's just his other woman. Now, we got two choices. We can be the woman or the other woman. We don't have but those two. Now, I know we don't like that. I don't like that. You know, but that's the reality of our life at some point. Now, it's up to the man.
But
every
about,
man doesn't want two women,
about,
but those that do, they're going to do it.
What about our morals and our religion?
Whose religion? Whose morals?
Not our religion, because we're not practicing the religion of black people anymore. That was taken from us. We don't have our morals anymore. That was taken from us. So whose idea are you representing when you stand up for those values? Not ours. Somebody else's. Some other nationality. And it may work for them. But it doesn't work for us. It hasn't worked for anybody, really. But nobody wants to deal with the truth. Monogamy was only created because of the economics of it.
The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman has been out for, what, over a year now?
March the 20th will be the first year anniversary. And for that anniversary, I'm releasing my new video. And the video is called The Black Man's Guide on Tour. And it is exciting.
I would assume it's pretty
hot.
Yeah,
it's hot, I tell you.
After writing this book, just take a moment before you answer.
Okay.
Do you regret anything about what you wrote? If you had the chance to do it all over again, would you perhaps soften some of the things that you said?
No. That doesn't require any in-depth thought. I've been asked that a lot, of course. No, I wouldn't, because, see, we always want some kind of instruction and help to come to us that doesn't affect the status quo. We want somebody to tell us some information or give us some instruction that doesn't require us to change. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This book requires change. And one thing this book has done that I have really been pleased with, it has certainly reopened communications. And a lot of us as black women, because of what here seems like is just so radical, are willing to make a lot of concessions now and cooperate a lot of other kind of ways to keep from having to do any of these things that I list in here. So I have letters from black men who just write and say, listen, thank you. My wife is cooking better meals now. I have letters from children that say, thank you. My mother quit her second job. She's home with us now at night. I have had black men walk up to me on the street in New York and reach out to shake my hand and say thank you and just burst into tears and say, thanks, hey, I thought I'd never
and
live to see the day.
Not to jump on your case or anything here, but just to say in defense, how many of those women are afraid of an open-handed slap in the face?
That's a terrible thing.
You have been accused of advocating violence.
No, see, that's a misconception. I'm trying to stop violence in the black community. Now, we know, Raven, that domestic violence is at an all-time high in the black community. Black men currently are kicking us, blacking our eyes, knocking our teeth out, stabbing us, shooting us. They're doing a lot of horrible things to us. All right? So what I'm trying to do is to put some direction on that. One of the problems we have is that we don't know that change happens in degrees and stages. So if we just say, tell our men, don't hit women, they're not going to do that any more than they're going to say no to drugs. You know, that doesn't work in that way just to give that kind of instruction. So let's first put some controls on it. Let's get our men to recognize that they don't have to go off and brutalize us with their fists and hit us with weapons and kick us in the stomach and hit us in the
but
breath.
It's okay for him to hit me with his
hand? Wait a minute. I'm saying that if I can stop black men from kicking and shooting and stabbing and stomping black women and get them to just lightly tap us in the mouth, I will have saved a lot of lives and preserved a lot of families.
What kind of logic is that?
Well, they're not going to stop doing it completely. Now, let's deal with the reality of the statistics. You know, 40% of our women are brutalized. So I'm trying to get the men to stop doing that to us. The Red Cross suggests the same motion, and nobody's ever jumped on them. If a person gets hysterical, you slap them in the face to bring them back around to reality. And I'm not even saying a hard slap. And let's go over that, because that's something that's confused all over the country. I'm so tired. That's the national anthem of black women. Now, at first I thought they were really upset, but I think it's been kind of a smokescreen. They're trying to use that to get black men not to read the rest of the book. Okay, this is what it says. If the black woman is brutalized repeatedly, the relationship will fail, and the black man will possibly be arrested and charged with cowardly abusing a woman. This is not the goal. Make no mistake about it. No black eyes, no punching in the stomach, the breast, no stomping, and no uppercuts. Analyzing the options available to the black man when the black woman's mouth, verbal abuse has been proven to be just as violent and harmful as physical abuse. When her mouth becomes uncontrollably disrespectful, they total only a few. He can walk away from her, leave the house, get drunk. We know men do that. He can go to his other woman and complain. He can quit the relationship, leave the woman. He can try to argue back and lose. Nobody can out-argue us, okay? Or he can seek counseling or sympathy from friends. Now, those are the only options any man has when a woman is running off at the mouth to him. Or he can offer her a sound open-handed slap in the mouth. That doesn't go from point A to Z. There's a lot of other options in there that our men use. I'm just describing what happens. Ordinarily, when he gets to that point six, it's not a slap. It's a brutal hit with a fist. I'm trying to stop him from doing that to us.
But
and I'm trying to get us to control it differently.
No kind of violence should be advocated.
Well, that's not advocating violence. The violence is already going on. I'm trying to stop it. I'm trying to put some controls on it.
Sure, is that?
And that's something that people don't understand.
You are a mother.
Yes, I have 12
How
children.
How would you feel if your daughter called you at 2 a.m. in the morning and said, Mom, he hit me? Now, you're a mother now. You're a mother.
Well, I'm not emotional like that. I'd have to say what happened. Put him on extension and let me find out what happened.
There are many women out there who would like to know, are you married?
Of course I'm married. Yeah, now you know I'm with being with a man. I'm not ashamed to say I need a man. No, I need a man. I'm one of those women. I have to have a man. I am not ashamed of that. My first husband died in 1985, unfortunately, of a heart attack. And I have a new husband now. And I've given the children to him, and we're raising them. And he's a very beautiful man. He's not afraid of me. He's not intimidated by me. And he knows me, and he has read the book. Okay? He is in agreement with my campaign. And all of my sons are in agreement with this. I have 7 sons, and they are very beautiful and very talented. And it's very interesting to see how, as a result of me teaching them differently, the girls that come there, they don't run the same game on them. You know, like they can't come into our house with the mini skirts on.
Mm-hmm.
They can't come in with the skin-tight clothes on.
You are Muslim, may I add that?
Of course,
okay.
But I'm not teaching our people religion.
Okay.
They already failed that course. I wouldn't dare try to teach black people religion.
Does that influence the way
you structure Islam influences everything that goes on in the black community, because that's what we were before we were brought here as slaves. So, yes, it certainly has influenced my life.
Can I jump back?
It's not a book on religion, and I don't bring it into it like that.
Sure. I want to jump back for just a moment. You said there are 3 kinds of black women. Where do you fall?
Probably somewhere, the categories overlap, probably between the 2-3.
And how do you criticize yourself?
Well, as I said, I work every day to be a better wife, better mother, and I have not said I'm perfect. You know, I'm a victim of all of the things, just like all of the rest of us are. And I don't say that all black women do everything in my book. None of us have lived long enough to do everything in the book, but all of us do some of them. And every time that we do them, then it serves to break up our relationship and run our men away from us, when that's not really what we want at all. We really want him to run toward us. But sometimes we function in such a way that makes him be outside looking for peace of mind with somebody else, because we withhold the peace because we're mad at him about something, you know. I go around trying to tell black women, if one of the things we can do for our men is just smile when we see him coming. Yeah? If you get with these ideas, the first thing it'll do is relax the muscles in your face. You won't be so uptight all the time. It'll make you beautiful.
What are you teaching your daughters regarding to this philosophy?
That to be able to judge things on an unemotional basis, to try to go by the actual facts of what is presented to you instead of how you feel about it. Our people in general have a problem distinguishing between actual fact and opinion. And we think we have an option to reject the truth based on how we feel about it. And the truth doesn't change just because we feel a certain way about it. It remains the truth. So I teach them that.
Is this book semi-autobiographical?
Oh, absolutely not. Excuse me. Absolutely not. No,
but no. But doesn't the average person that write a book, there's a little bit of him somewhere in what
you write? I'm the writer here. You the TV host, and writers do not do that. You can write about anything you want to. And the only thing I regret is that I didn't write The Black Man's Guide to Understand the Black Woman Part 2, because there's some more. This is just all I put into one book. But I'm coming out with The Black Woman's Guide to Understand the Black Man in 1993, probably.
Well, I will tell you right now, there will be a lot of ladies.
Oh, yeah, we return money every day. They're trying to buy it already, but I don't have it ready.
The most profound question, perhaps, that I can ask you right now, do you believe in what you're writing, or are you a very astute businesswoman making a buck?
Well, I believe absolutely in what I'm writing. I wouldn't come out here and go through what I have to go through around the country every day. And I could be in a different city every day of the year. The demand is just that great. I read an article in Emerge magazine the other day. People have been writing in about my book as a result of an article they wrote a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the editor put a note in the magazine, in the front of their magazine, that's Emerge magazine now. that's supposed to be black people coming out and so forth, they put a paragraph in there that said, we have been still getting letters on Shahrazad Ali's book, The Black Man's Guide to Understand the Black Woman,
mm-hmm.
but we're not going to publish any more of them because we have decided that the book has made enough money. I thought that was the most ignorant remark. So I told my secretary, get him on the telephone. So I got that nigger on the phone. I said, has IBM made enough money? Has Nike, Reebok, AT&T? Why don't you go tell them people that they made enough money? You know, that's so silly that our people take an attitude of wanting to stifle someone else's success. The part that you mentioned in regard to me being a successful publisher and black, a female entrepreneur, absolutely. I have a great deal of insight about the publishing industry. I did this by myself. And you would think that somebody would want to do a story on that side, since obviously I know how to put together a successful project and carry it off into the second year now. But they don't want to deal with that, and they keep saying I've made enough money. And nobody even knows how much money I have made. They don't know what my responsibilities are. They do know I have 12 children. You know, but I thought that was such an ignorant remark for a black person to make when all of the people who are making money off of black people in our community, where it's not benefiting us at all, it's not helping us to grow or to change or to be better, and they never get addressed. They never get attacked. But they keep saying to me, you know, that I have made enough money, and they don't even know.
The irony in this is that you said you wish you could see more black women taking more interest in the home.
Well,
you are a businesswoman. You're traveling all the time. Who's cooking your husband dinner tonight?
My husband travels with me a lot of the times. You all just don't know who he is because we can't let that out. No, he's with me a great deal of the time. I have a strong family, extended family structure. I have sisters. And my children are between the ages of 5 and 26.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that 23, 24, and 25-year-old don't know how to take care of the children when I'm not there, then I have failed. But I haven't, because they do know how to carry on until I get back, you know.
Have you met any one black woman that you do admire, who you think has done an excellent job?
I admire a lot of black women all of the time. Marva Collins. I just made a huge donation to the Marva Collins Preparatory School in Cincinnati in memory of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
I've donated to a lot of organizations around the country, you know, to help black children. Mostly that's what I do. I don't donate any money that's going to be used for administrative costs. I don't do that. But if it's going to go directly to the children, I do that. A lot of black women. You know, we've done, as I said, I represent that great strength that we have. I admire you for what you're doing. It takes a lot of courage to bring me in on a television show and let me just talk. A lot of people wouldn't
Thank
do
you.
That.
Thank
you, know?
You.
And I wish you success in your career.
Thank you very much.
After I'm gone.
Shahrazad, do you have an opinion of the white woman?
Just that she's been an influence on us, and that not intentionally. She's just living her life. She didn't tell us to copy her,
mm-hmm.
you know, but the way the society is set up, we have copied a lot of her ideas, and a lot of the standards she sets for the white man, we have tried to set them for the black man, except all of the things that are required for a man to have to meet those prerequisites our men are kept from getting. You understand? So it's really, really a messed up situation, and so we make demands on our men that they just can't... they can't produce.
You've been on the talk show circuit for quite some time now.
10 months.
Do you find that even journalists in the highest degree have trouble remaining objective when they talk to you?
Yeah, most of them. In fact, what they do is on the newspaper interviews, they sit there and they're so nice. Oh, they're so wonderful. And then I leave town and then I get a copy of the story in the mail. Oh, God, they roast me alive, you know.
You write some pretty powerful stuff. It must be hard to even go on an airport.
Oh, sometimes. Well,
sometimes.
It certainly has allowed me to be recognized. You know, people, because I wear these crowns, you know, they recognize me in a lot of places. But most of the time, which is a story which has never been told, there are so many black women who love me. There are so many black women who, in fact, next week I'll be going to Baltimore. And there's a group there called the Black Women's Consciousness Raising Organization or something. And it's a black women's group of 250 black women. Professional women. They have invited me into their convention to be the keynote speaker.
May I
say,
I've
got black women all over the country who are in support of this project. In fact, I just gave that lecture in Miami,
uh-huh.
and the man who invited me in was 78 years old. He said he thought he'd never live to see the day that the truth was told about our women. You know, he's a 78-year-old black man who is still in business. He invited me in. Most of the people at the lecture were women. Most of the people who bought 2 and 3 books for their sons were women. Most of the people that bought books for their daughters who were getting married were women. You know, so it's been distorted of who actually is supporting this project. We have 30 million people out here. About 15 million of them have jobs.
Mm-hmm.
About 7 million of them can read or have disposable income to buy a book. And I haven't reached the market that I intend to reach in order to actually get this message to penetrate into our communities. The book being required reading is certainly going to help us to face some realities. Our young people want a different life. They don't want the failure that many of us have suffered. They have seen that this has not worked for many of us, and they want something different. They want to find out why they can't get along, why their mating techniques are failing for them, and why they're so frustrated, why there's so much game and nonsense in it. And this book will help them to do that.
Shahrazad Ali, it has been a pleasure to have you today in our program. Can I just add something for just a moment? I had the opportunity to have lunch with you today.
Yes.
You are a very personable individual.
Absolutely. They just tried to make you a monster on television.
But can I say that if I didn't know about this book, on a first impression of you, I never would have thought you'd have written that.
Well, you may not have. Many of us have some talents that our larger communities can benefit from. You know, if I had met you somewhere, I might not have realized that you were a very popular and dedicated talk show host. I wouldn't have known that until you told me what you do. I believe that the message I'm trying to bring to my people is a message from God. I think that the only way our people get any message or information from God is through the people, and that this is a very important work I'm doing. This is not a game to me. It has a great emotional drain on me. People come against me with a lot of negative ideas. They come hard. They bring all the force that they have to bear, and I have to stand up under that.
How do you deal with that?
You know, well, I don't internalize it. I don't let it go in. I expected us to have an emotional reaction, and I know that when you have a revolution of social change, the first reaction is emotional, but those people settle down. And so if I have to be the brunt of that in order for them to get to a better life, in order for us to have a better child, then I just have to take that. And, of course, my own man has to absorb a lot of what I bring to him. Sometimes, every once in a while, somebody will get through, and they'll say something that'll, you know, just be so penetrating, you know, say, wow, listen at that. But I just don't internalize it because I know that it's not me they really want to attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really want to just not have to take responsibility for their behavior. They don't want anyone to say that's wrong because most of the negative practices we have, we've been doing them so long, we think that they are right. And so we don't want anybody to come out and say, you're doing that wrong. And we certainly don't want our man to say that's right, you are wrong.
Has this been worse, what you've had to go through,
Absolutely.
Being accosted in airports and
Absolutely.
Practically blessed out on television
most
shows?
Of the, anytime I'm accosted in the airport, it's because somebody wants an autograph or they want a book. I mean, I've had an entire basketball team in L.A., you know, they want a book or they want an autograph, but it has not been negative. And certainly, as I said, we can always dwell on that one issue in the book that people tried to bring up that's negative about violence. As I have explained, that's not what I was trying to do. And that certainly keeps people from understanding the rest of the book, which is calling on us as black women to bring some of that backboning strength that we have, some of that monumental dedication to the black family, back to making a family. A family is more than a woman and children. A family is a father and a mother and children.
You cannot deny, however, that there are many black women who have decided for whatever reason to go it alone and
oh, yeah.
are successful in raising children who are not
no,
on
they're not
drugs.
God,
yes,
not,
wait. Let
successful.
Me just make my point now.
But
who
now,
are sending their children to college,
that's not
who run a good home.
I keep trying to explain that. Feeding and clothing and raising a child and making sure it's not on drugs and it goes to college, that doesn't guarantee that child any emotional success in their relationships in life. That just means they may be able to get a job. See, we have to look at even what the success standard is that we're talking about. That's not necessarily success. That doesn't guarantee us success. If we can raise up an emotionally stable child, one who knows how to carry on our black nation, who knows how to be a good mother and still perhaps contribute to the outside community, if we can raise up fathers who take responsibility for their children and who know that their presence in the home is a needed one if we are to survive, there are a lot of other things more important than us just getting a college education and a job. That does not guarantee the success of a nation. That guarantees a personal financial success, which is not the only thing that we need to revive our black nation.
Let's talk about the future just briefly.
Mm-hmm.
What's up next for you?
The video
The Black Man's Guide on Tour, which is coming out March the 20th. And hopefully by Christmas we'll have it completed. I'm working on a prototype of the Shahrazad doll. And the Shahrazad doll is going to be a little doll with a little lady with a little crown on. And she'll be holding a little Black Man's Guide. And when you punch her on top of the crown, she'll give you a positive message. I love that. When I thought of that, I said straight up in the bed. But she's going to do that, and I've been asked to come into the elementary schools more now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm starting to, as I said, if I could work every day of the year, there's a request for me to come out and talk to our people because they want some relief and they want some explanation. And most of our people are intelligent enough to know that just because of the popularity of this book, you know, our educational class has failed us because all of them together have never been able to bring one agenda to the forefront of our nation where all of the people are dealing with it, like this book has. The Black Man's Guide has succeeded in doing that. Our people are dealing with this all across the country, and it's becoming a crossover book. The white man says it's starting to help him with the white woman. So they're going to be in trouble, too. It's not just us anymore.
You will be going to Africa very soon.
Hopefully, Nelson Mandela called me, and he invited me to come there to Johannesburg. He says that they have a similar problem with the black women in South Africa, and that many of them try to marry into the white race because they think it provides them with better benefits than staying with their men who are suppressed, you know, under the apartheid system. And I have been invited to London, of course, where the book is becoming a bestseller. I've even been invited to Ireland. They don't even have no black people there, but they say they want me to come over there and talk to the white woman. You know, I mean, I haven't been, this is a global project now. I just can't go everywhere. I don't have the energy or the time, and I can't keep dragging my children and my own husband. You know, he's got some things he's doing that I have to work with him on. And so, but who I want to work with, actually, is the black woman and the black man here in America where I live. That's where I'm really doing my major work. And if I go anyplace else, it'll probably just be live remote television, you know, to someplace else, but I don't know if I'm going to really have the time to travel to those other places.
Did you know when you wrote this book that it would take off like this?
I suspected it would. It's new information. We've never had it. This is brand new information, and no matter what anybody else ever writes about relationships, this is going to be the standard by which it will be judged.
I want to talk just a moment about something that I saw recently on television. Everybody has taken the opportunity to make their poke at you.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see, by chance, the skit that was done on In Living Color?
Yes.
What did you think about that?
Well, you know, the phone started ringing off the hook. People were calling me from all over the country to tell me, did you see Living Color? And nobody knew how to react, you know, because they didn't know what my reaction would be, and they didn't know if I was going to go off, you know. I can walk around with a loaded gun sometimes, so they didn't know, you know, if it was going to be in it. So I thought that was hysterical. That was the funniest thing I have ever seen, and it was a compliment because they could not have done that and been successful if they hadn't assumed that everyone, first of all, knew who I was familiar with the book. So, you know, that was excellent penetration, I felt, of the media. I had reached some goals, and I called him to thank him, and told him that I wasn't angry. He wasn't sure if I was or not, but I just thanked him and I sent him an autographed copy of the book. That's all I did. But I thought they had me down pat, I have to say.
Even your family thought so?
Yeah, my son said, Mama, it was just like you. So we taped it, you know, and we have, it's been on a couple of times since they aired mm-hmm. it because of demand. And we have it at home, and it's certainly one that we get out a lot of times when company comes if they didn't see it, and we play it because it was so funny. But it was just a takeoff, and so many people have been able to earn money. You know, this book has put the black bookstore on the map. It has allowed a lot of black bookstores to open up other branches of their bookstores. A lot of people have testified that they have bought cars, put their children into the first year of college. This mm-hmm. is one book, you know. We can't ignore the economic base that this book has put into the black community. The first 6 months it was out, I only allowed it to be sold in black bookstores. But then as I did more national television shows, we didn't have enough bookstores to carry it that were in the mainstream of cities, and so I started allowing B. Dalton, Walden, and Encore, and all of the other chains to carry it. But it has done a great deal for the black community in regard to being an economic base.
And I would think black people would be happy to have something else to sell other than Avon and Tupperware. Those are not our products, you know.
Let's just briefly, we're just about out of time, but I would like you to leave us here in Tallahassee, Florida, and the surrounding areas, the surrounding counties that can watch this program. What are some words of advice or wisdom or courting, according to Shahrazad Ali?
Just some, the only wisdom that I can leave you is the information that's already recorded in most of our holy books, and that's that God made the man and woman to be together in unity. And so it is impossible for us as black women to attend church and say that we love and worship God when we disrespect our own man, who is in the image of God, because God is a man. And our men may be the closest representative of that kind of masculinity of God that we ever meet. And that we should stop using our children to punish our men. We should stop disrespecting our men in front of our children. Sometimes we talk badly about them. It makes the child get a different idea about the father just because of our personal relationship. And that we should start trying to be a little bit more patient, tolerant, and courteous. And those are some attributes that we have kind of gotten away from because we are on this speed thing of trying to make a living. And as I said, I'm not saying that he's right, but if we become better women, he's got to become a better man.
Shahrazad Ali, thank you so much. This has been a very interesting
interview. I know your people are going to love this. Nobody ever gets to hear me talk this much. All right.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Vibration.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
That's our show for this week. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
That was beautiful, guys. That was beautiful. Did you see or hear what she said or feel, you know, when she said about uplifting our black men, you know, unity? I mean, if we do not realize that all of this is separated, separation is on a mass scale. What I love is that these things will happen in divinity, you know what I mean, with or without our consents, really. That's the beauty of it, because we ain't going to act right out here. Not a lot of times, you know, but divinity will take its course. You know, I kind of want to end here, guys. Sometimes, remember, sometimes you got to lose yourself to find yourself. All right? All right, guys. We'll just end there. And join me tomorrow, Spiritual Soul Sunday. What do I have tomorrow? It's going to be a lecture with Marvin. Brother Marvin, y'all guys know him. Cosmic Updates, okay? So we're going to have Cosmic Updates tomorrow with a lecture from Marvin. So, all right, guys, love y'all. Women, know that any critique, anything that you may be resistant to or anything that seems like an attack, your greatest gift. All right, guys.
I can love you better, lose myself in love. I used to do it for the love a long time ago, and all I ever wanted was love. I used to love without fear a long time ago, and all I ever wanted was love. Then somebody came around and tried to hurt me, tried to make me feel like I was unworthy. Took a pure love and tried to make it dirty. True to us, they never did deserve me, no. I had to lose myself I can love you better. Had to lose myself. Had to lose myself so I can love you better. Lose myself in love, and that's just the way it is. Couldn't tell me I was in love when I needed it, when all I ever wanted was love. Should've told me I was worth receiving it, but all I ever wanted was love. Something awkward about the selflessness it takes to give love and the good that it makes you. True love can never really forsake you, but it took a little while just for me to see. I had to lose myself so I can love you better. Had to lose myself, had to lose myself so I can make it better. Had to lose myself, had to lose. fear of facing failure. And I couldn't love you perfectly without fear in my head. So perilously I had to face the danger, so I could come back and love you all instead. All of you so the same, so I can make it better. I had to lose myself, had to lose myself, so I can love you better. Never meant to hurt ya. Couldn't stay, but I never meant to desert ya. Whole lot of things I just had to work through. Time to heal and restore myself well. Confrontation of my fears and anxiety. Cried a whole lot of years, I suffered quietly. And though it may have taken years, I can finally tell you that you were always on my mind. I had to love myself so I can love you better.
Guys, with a gift, you know, just the words, the 22 minutes of this sister, you know, she's a sister, all right, y'all listen to her, she's a, and it's 12:22, all right, guys, we'll end with that.
Peace, family, it's Camson, the Oracle, one half of Remnants Gathering, a.k.a. Widow Gang Gang. And I wanted to drop a really quick video just speaking on some of the energy that I feel is prompting us to evolve. And it's kind of like an evolve or die type energy. Evolve or die. And I say that because I have been battling with death. Death in my mentality. Death in the way that I move throughout the day, and I'm going to explain what that means. So sometimes the trauma that you have experienced when you're going through the awakening and you're being triggered and consciousness is expanding and your higher self is calling you up to be activated and to not be dormant and to not live on autopilot and to not follow everybody else's rules and regulations and traditions and beliefs, you're questioning everything. And as you're questioning everything, you're figuring out what's right for you. And what's right for you may be totally opposite of what society has taught you, what your culture has taught you, what is acceptable in your family, whatever religion, belief systems that you grew up in. We're finding what is right for us. And this is a whole this is the collective energy of what we're being called to do, to explore ourselves and step more into our authenticity and to be sovereign and to be individuals and not clones and not living because of the pressure to fit in. And so, you know, so when you awaken from the matrix, when you come out of the artificial womb, the artificial time frequency, what happens is you just begin to question everything and you begin a deep self-exploration and you go on this journey and you find yourself just falling into these rabbit holes, you know, and you're just seeking truth and seeking what resonates with you. And so in all of that, the trauma, we have the ancestral trauma, you know what I'm saying, the generational shit that maybe you've been called to clear in your family. We have the trauma that, for those of us who are intuitives and empaths, we have the trauma that we're feeling from our land, some shit that happened to our ancestors, and things that happened to people maybe that we have some type of bloodline connection to, you know, and you can feel it pulsing from the land. And if you don't know the history of the land where you live, you know, this could be really impactful on you. And you're feeling the things from your past life because maybe you're awakening now to clear the karma from a past life. So you got all of this happening at one time. And so the trauma comes to the surface, and as you're doing these deep dives into your subconscious mind and you're shifting more towards, you know, middle path, for those of us who are already awakened and have left religion institutions, you're seeking that. You right-hand path, and then you middle path, and then it's like left-hand path. Oh, that's subconscious, unconscious shit? Okay, well, maybe I need some of that. And you're just going through all of these different things that you're discovering. Different ways to master yourself. And in doing that, sometimes I just have these moments and these days where I just wake up in some type of programming, some type of trauma that has been stored in my body, my emotional body, my mental body, my pain body, my desire body. And I'm feeling the impacts of those things needing to be healed and purged. And I'm reliving some of my childhood wounds. And maybe I'm being triggered. And I'm remembering how, as a kid, I did sometimes feel neglected or left out or abandoned. Or even some of the trauma that I experienced as an adult. And all of that stuff just starts coming to the surface. And it can either bring you into a depression. You could go into having a spiritual emergency, which we taught about on our YouTube channel. You could go into wanting to numb yourself. You could start reaching for substances or retail therapy or just doing things to cope and to make you feel better. But your higher self is calling you to expand and to reach your highest potential. So you also feel the conflict of that. And so all of a sudden it's not okay anymore for you to be mediocre. It's not okay anymore for you to choose the things that's not going to take you where your aspirations are wanting you to go. And so you get in that struggle, and you get in a struggle where the wounded part of you is like, no, I need things to stay the same. I'm more comfortable in a controlled environment. I don't want to try new things. I don't want to open myself up. I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want my family to not accept me anymore, you know, because of whatever it is I'm doing or believe in or what I identify with. All these things coming up for you, and you can feel this internal conflict. And whenever your present self is not in a vibration that is connecting you to your higher self, and you've been desiring to evolve, you're going to feel that conflict and that inner turmoil. And I said, you know, I've really been feeling that lately. And so when the trauma came up for me, I suffer with something called complex PTSD. And so my nervous system gets dysregulated with certain triggers and certain memories, you know. So if you have nightmares, if you have memories of things coming back to you just out the blue, and it just kind of stops you in your tracks, like a lot of those things can be signs of complex PTSD, which I believe most people who are experiencing this awakening thing are feeling that. and starting to identify and see, you know, I'm processing a lot of trauma, a lot of shit that I ignored. So in the age of Pisces, that energy was like supportive of us being on, basically being on life support. You know, we weren't really living. We were just following the narratives that we were given, you know, by those that raised us, those around us, the, you know, and so just don't rock the boat, operate in my egoic self. The false self is what gets approval, and I don't have to deal with as much conflict and issues, so I'm going to operate in my false self. But when you awaken, you realize that there's this whole other self. You have these all of these other facets of you. And so when my complex PTSD shows up, it renders me useless. I almost suffer from paralysis to where I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't even want to move. You know, I just want to sit still, cuddle up. I just want to try to comfort myself. It's crazy. And I'll catch myself doing that, and I realize I'm processing some trauma. And so the best way to deal with that, if this is resonating with you, is to begin working on detoxing your mind of the judgment of you and how you respond and what you do and the things that you're learning about yourself, you know, as you're doing the path, walking the path of self-realization, you know, just releasing the judgment on that, and it can come up, and whatever it is for you, you know, substance abuse is a big thing in my lineage, so it's something that I have to be keenly aware of, and it's just I was born into really interesting circumstances where there were certain substances that I would need to function, and where the pain level isn't so great that I can't function at all. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where nobody can really tell me exactly how to do that, you know, unless you have experienced it. And so I'm always having to gauge my choices and look further down the line and see, this choice right now, is this taking me to where I want to go or away from where I want to go? Is this keeping me stuck in a second place or allowing me to come out of it? And so, you know, but there is a time for that death current as well. And the death current is just that part of you as you're going through the transformation. Sometimes some parts of you need to die. Sometimes some of your coping mechanisms are needing to die. So again, in the age of Pisces, we were on life support, and you could kind of live on autopilot, and it was cool, you know. But now it's like your body won't let you eat what you want to eat. You can't drink whatever you want to drink. You can really feel the results of not getting enough sleep. You can feel the results of not exercising. You can, like, all of a sudden now we're extremely energetically sensitive to everything happening with our temples. And so there are times, though, where you need to go into that death current, and you may become, you know, it's like a cocoon. You go into a cocoon for your transformation to happen. And so you just kind of have to be aware and diagnosing yourself and saying, okay, have I been in a cocoon too long, you know? Am I not living right now because I'm so busy coping and trying to get through this awakening process of self-realization and self-actualization? Am I just coping or am I living? And so, you know, so there is a time for life and time for death. And this is why with full moon energy and new moon energy, we talk about it on our channel. We welcome those energies and we perform rituals and ceremonies that are going to be in alignment with that energy to maximize the results that we are seeking to obtain on the path of self-mastery. And so with that comes the battle of being able to step out of the conditioning from your trauma. And the only way you will get to the next level is releasing the judgment, not just of yourself, but other people. And that is a whole other topic that I'm probably going to do a build on that topic alone. But the religious indoctrination, it caused us to be very judgmental in a way that I would say I would compare to a mental imbalance, a mental illness, to where we had to always be judging everything we were doing in an attempt to be right, or in an attempt to have the people that raised us be proud of us or happy of us, or the people that surround us. You know what I'm saying? We were really trying to do that and be that, to the point where we internalized that and we lost ourselves in that judgment. And so if you are awakening and you came through religion, whether it was firsthand, secondhand, or third, I talk about what that means, whether it was you, whether it was your mom or dad, grandparents, whoever, most of us were definitely touched by the indoctrination of religion. And so you went through this cycle of judgmental, but you would call it discerning yourself. We always had these words that we used that kept us in that sleep and in that slumber and under that spell and that stasis, where we weren't really getting to know ourselves, because ourselves seemed to be something that was so terrible, bad, broken, wounded, just couldn't get it right, sinful, no good thing about you since the day you was born. You born in sin, shaped in iniquity, you just ain't shit. You ain't shit, you ain't shit, you ain't shit. And you gotta repent, 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 pay some tithes, some offerings, read some scriptures, pray, 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 fast, fast, fast. And we did so much of that that our brains have been trained to hone in on the things we're not doing that we feel meet our expectation or the expectations of other people around us. And then we begin to project that on other people. And so people who came through some form of religion, we are extremely judgmental and can be very, very critical, which is why we're so critical of ourselves. And what this does is it gets in the way of you being able to find your authentic self, because you have a subconscious program that you are probably not aware of until you hear me talking about it now. And that religious, judgmental, policing type mentality is in there somewhere, always casting judgment on you. And what that does is, one of the five sutras of the age of Aquarius is that to know that the person that you are seeing is you too. So there is something and everything outside of you that triggers you that has a point of contact inside of you, which is why it triggers you and which is why you're so keen to see it. And so knowing that all of those things are somehow a reflection of maybe some soul work we need to do within ourselves, releasing the judgment is going to be the only way that you'll be able to have compassion for yourself and compassion for other people. And so, the Surviving Religion series thing, we're still kind of working on the rest of that because we're exploring it right now, and it's so deep. Religion caused a lot of trauma, and you know, we can get into how much blood been shed because of religion and the wars and all of that, but just beyond that, it has caused a lot of trauma. And so in our search to regather the parts of ourselves that we lost, that were fragmented and compartmentalized, in our effort to figure out, why is my soul here outside of all my conditioning? In order for you to continue to evolve, you got to work on releasing your judgment and finding out, is my subconscious mind judgmental about the stuff that I have recently learned about that I'm coming into the knowledge of? So your conscious mind might be like, okay, my beliefs are changing, I'm evolving, I'm becoming more of a 4D consciousness person than a 3D consciousness person, and ascending even into 5D mentality. So it's not the self-exploration on the spiritual journey of self-realization is not you judging yourself, criticizing yourself, feeling convicted every single day that you can't get it right, and then trying to fix it. See, all this stuff accumulates, and it creates trauma that stores in the body. What we're doing now is just being the observer. So whatever is happening outside of you that triggers you if you've got a mental block where you can't see your shadow aspects and some of your shadow aspects and subconscious programming is just below your radar, pay attention to the shit that really, really make you feel some kind of way that happens outside of you, and then you'll be able to make the connections. And this is what it's going to take to reach our authentic selves, because your authentic self just might be something that resembles something that you had really strong judgments about prior to awakening. So if your authentic self is something that you once viewed as wrong, bad, demonic, evil, any of that, and this was the case for me, my authentic self was to use all forms of spirituality to help other people and to help myself. But a lot of those tools and modalities and belief systems I viewed as evil, wicked, demonic, and bad. So my authentic self was being contained inside of my own judgments. So in order for me to cross over from the Christian prophet to who I am now, I had to be able to release the judgment of using those tools and modalities, and it allowed me to step more into my authentic self. Did I pay a price for it? Yes. Did I upset some people? Of course, I'm sure I did. But at the end of the day, I can sleep at night knowing that I am reaching my highest potential and I am searching for the parts of myself that I lost and whatever conditioning that I was born into this world to experience. And as you do that, you will sacrifice some things, but it's worth it because you're no longer forfeiting the essence of who you came here to be just on the strength of how a handful of people may react to it. So I wanted to share this because we want to go deeper into the surviving religion and finding your authentic self, and I just want you to remember what I'm saying to you, that your authentic self, for those of you who like, I'm having a hard time really communicating with my higher self and communicating with my spirit guides, which are different aspects of you, different kingdoms and energies and consciousness that live inside of you, right? And so if you're having a hard time making a connection with the unseen parts of you and the other extensions of source, then it may very well be because you have some subconscious programming that still sees some of those things as harmful, wicked, evil, demonic, judge, and your judgments of that is keeping you locked out from stepping more fully into your light and to who you came here to be. So, you know, I hope that this helps somebody, but yes, y'all, the Age of Aquarius is supporting us with the energy of Maya, truth, and balance, so that we can find our authentic selves. And you know what's so beautiful about stepping into your authentic self? You filter out the things that just don't align with where you're going. The more authentic you are, that shit is like a Brita filter. And it removes so much stuff that you didn't, it's just water, and you couldn't even see it. Right, but the Brita filter is just constructed in a way that's going to catch it, and you open it and look at it, and you're like, yo, it's crazy that all of that was in the water I had been drinking. And so that's what it's like. So yes, you may lose some things and let go of some things, but remember, like, you're being filtered. You're becoming more pure, more authentic, more sovereign, more walking in your divinity, however that looks. And so you can't lose. You cannot lose. When you are finding your true self, you can lose nothing, because your true self is everything. And that is the point of attraction for everything else. So when you seek God first, the divinity, the essence of source inside of you that came into this world to have an experience and bring something to this world only you can bring, when you tap into that part of you, everything else will follow and things will begin to work themselves out, because you're in alignment with your authentic energy. I'm full. So much more to share. So go to the website. Like, we really dive deep. We dive deep, and for those of you all who like to dive deep too, you know, for those of you all just now awakening, we got a lot of stuff for you too. Like, we really try to include as much of the collective awakening as possible. So check the website at remnantsgathering.com. Don't bring your judgments. Leave your judgments somewhere else, because, you know, we created this to be a sacred space to not bring that. That's why we welcome all people. And when we're on our lives and stuff, we vibe with everybody, because people need a space to practice their authenticity without the worry of being judged, you know, ostracized, outcast, all of those things. So that's why we created the space that we did. It was a very sacred space. And just bringing judgment into that space is just not going to be tolerated. It's not going to be beneficial for nobody. It's toxic. And the world cannot change. We cannot be the architects of the new earth unless we begin to detox the things that have kept us oppressed, enslaved, and repeating unnecessary cycles. May, your third eye has just been kissed. Peace.
That is what prevented the evolution of humanity up until this point, because everyone was an individual, but now everybody is connected.
Ready to head down the path of feeling optimal? Whether you are an entrepreneur or an athlete, you can take your health to the next level. Listen as prominent guests come on to talk with Amir about mastering your mindset, improving your sleep patterns, boosting energy levels, enhancing IQ, and in-depth analysis on biohacking your body to live your life optimally. Join over 45,000 Optimal Health Warriors as we welcome the host of the Optimal Health Show, Amir Rozic.
Now today is going to be a special podcast. We got the one and only Dr. Bruce Lipton dropping by, and we're talking about everything. I mean, we're talking about spirituality, epigenetics, mindset, psychology, biology, food, and so much more. I'm so excited that you have this opportunity to share with me and experience what Dr. Bruce Lipton is about to share with us. So I won't take up the rest of your time, warriors. Without further ado, I want you to please sit back and relax and enjoy today's special podcast with Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of interesting things, because it's all about evolution and the process that's going on, and the significance for the millennial generation, who, you know, they've got to realize that they're in a very potentially most powerful experience on this planet, because they're going to break in a new civilization. They're the seeds, and they don't know it yet.
So have you seen any, like, or is there any exciting new research that you've been following in the world of epigenetics?
Well, it's all exactly come out, you know, for a long time, a lot of people said, you know, well, he's not wearing his white coat anymore, so he's no longer a scientist. So then I got to be a pseudoscientist, and then a charlatan, and then a fake and all that. And it's interesting, because just recently, there was a really wonderful research at UCLA down here in California, and the results of it from the main main researcher's name is Stephen Cole. I'll just read it to you. There's a really important part of this. He's talking about the research. There's a really important part of this, to an extent that immunologists and psychologists rarely appreciate. We are architects of our own experience. This is the sentence, though. Your subjective experience carries more power than your objective situation. Basically, it says what you perceive in your own experience is more powerful than the real world in which you live.
That is very profound statement.
It is, from an epigenetics researcher, UCLA professor of medicine, all that kind of stuff like that, because basically it's a full documentation of everything in the biology of belief.
There was another study that just came out recently, I think less than a month ago, and it's making crazy waves on the internet. And they're talking about that actual memories, habits, and characteristics can carry over into the next generation.
Well, I've seen bits on that on a molecular level. I don't know what they're looking at in this because some, you know, we carry over epigenetics.
I think how they did a study was in the habit. They had mice.
Yeah.
And they were doing simplified psychology testing with like electrical shock. So the mice goes to the food, gets a shock, and they bred the mice up to five generations. And they're trying to see if that same type of, say, offspring up to the third generation would have the same instinctive reaction to that shock. And they found out that the mice who were exposed to food equal shock, they actually avoided food naturally throughout, I think it was a third or fourth type of, third or fourth generation down the line.
Uh-huh.
So they're pretty much saying that, like, your behaviors of what you do today will carry over to your grandchildren.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's epigenetics. And what's relevant is, your grandchildren don't have to live with that if they understand it because they can change the epigenetics. See, in the old days, if it was genes, okay, your genes carry over, you got the genes, you got the problem. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. Epigenetics is an adjustment of the reading, and you can adjust it yourself so you're not really a victim when you understand it. If you don't understand it, you appear to be a victim of, oh, my God, I'm just, you know, fate is against me. And it's like, that's not true.
What do you think is one of the biggest dangers of today's time for our health?
The biggest danger of today's time is the lack of knowledge about how we operate that the public has no awareness of. You know, that phrase, knowledge is power. Everybody goes, yeah, and I go, you know, there's a more important take on it. It's like a lack of knowledge is a lack of power. And the amazing lack of knowledge about how we work as biological organisms is disempowering people because people feel they're victims of the genes, chromosomes, proteins, bugs, germs, whatever. And it's like that is the farthest thing from the truth. They are masters of it. But if they believe they're victims, then by definition, that belief will express itself. And that's what they experience.
I see something happening in the world right now, maybe just me because I consider myself still very young. I'm 29 actually this year, is I see a kind of shift in consciousness happening globally speaking. I see more or less people slowly starting to wake up. Are you noticing that same type of trend is happening?
Not only am I noticing it, I'm really going out and doing most of my work these days and helping people do that because the evolution that we're talking about, number one, it's not a physical evolution, it's a consciousness evolution. And number two, which is very critical about this, is that it's based on being informed. And so, and there's a need for this evolution. Let me ask you a question. Are we logging time?
Yeah, we're logging time. This is all free-flowing, baby.
Oh, I thought there was going to be some formal thing. Okay, so... Hello, formal people out there listening to me logging time here. This is very critical because as Amir is talking about, indeed, there's an evolution in front of us right now. I'll give you a simple fact. Five times in the history of this planet, life was thriving and then instantly got wiped out, relatively instantly. And these are called mass extinctions. Five times this has happened where, you know, full life going and then boom, life seemed to get wiped out and the bits and pieces left over, restarted the whole thing again, built it up to a flourishing biosphere, and then boom, it got lost again. Five times. Science has now made it a fact that we are now in the sixth mass extinction of life on this planet, that we are losing species of organisms faster than in any of the previous five mass extinctions. The relevance about today's mass extinction event, though, science has also recognized that while previous ones are attributed to things like comets or asteroids hitting the Earth and throwing the environment upside down, today's mass extinction is apparently been directly due to human behavior.
Mm.
That way we're living on this planet, the people, the way we treat the flora and fauna of the planet, the way we treat Mother Earth has been so destructive that we're undermining the web of life and we're seeing our own initiation of a collapse. and we're facing extinction. That's a real statement. This is not a million years from now. It's even just NASA just released a big scientific report that industrialized civilization will be totally crashed in the next few decades, and it might be only 2 decades, actually 20 years. So we're not talking like, you know, generations away. We're talking in your lifetime, this world is going to go through some most amazing upheaval that people have ever experienced on this planet. And if the outcome isn't decided, it doesn't mean just because we're going to make an action, we want to get there, that we're going to, you know, stem the tide here. It doesn't seem to be in that favor right now. It's like 50-50. The whole idea is this: what's going to happen to the people here? And the people are going to have to learn something. The way we've been living is totally antagonistic to life, and that new behaviors are required. What's interesting is I wrote a book about this called Spontaneous Evolution, which is based on the biology of belief. Biology of belief book comes down to a very simple fact. The life we experience is not a...
That he loves me. Sometimes it's just not money. Never had to afford me. Now I'm sick and tired. You just take it right. Know when I forgive you. You ain't here for dinner. Like I'm up for dinner. I loved you for your inner, inner, inner. And the next time I said you're too scared. Have you ever need someone so bad, but he ain't willing to make it last? Sometimes you gotta lose to win again. If it makes you cry, 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 and all you do is fight, can't get no sleep. All you did was worry. You didn't want nobody. Thought it would get better, but it's falling more. Oh, it's falling more. Ever. I just hope that we would, cause you're always up to no good. Maybe it'll take someone else. Show me better. Thinking, what's the difference? Why am I not interested? 'Cause when you've been broken, you feel like no one can fix.